Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Destiny. Now here's your host, Cliff Dunning.
So for the last couple of weeks, people have been enjoying Destiny, but some people are going, well, why don't you just make this a part of Earth Ancients? You know, some of it fits. Actually, it's unique in its own right. You remember, for a number of years, I was a program director for a number of national conferences. In fact, also the special director for the Learning Annex. And the Learning Annex was very big in the late 90s, 2000s. I think it was sold in 2000 and I want to say 7. And it faded after that. The company that bought it didn't run it correctly. I was long gone by then. But if you're familiar with the Learning Annex was an adult learning program. It was based in New York. I worked out of the San Francisco office. We also had a satellite office in Toronto. And so these were evening programs, one-off. Sometimes there were four or five programs weekly. But for the most part, they were one-off lectures, workshops, with people like Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, and people like that. Now, if you hear those names and they don't mean anything to you, those are, at the time, were people who were considered the top echelon of the personal growth area. You could call it personal growth, spirituality. And with Dr. Deepak Chopra, it got into wellness. But Destiny is about our future. And when I say that, it's like there's a term we used to use in the it's conference lingo. And the conference lingo goes like this. We offer tools for transformation. That's fairly blunt, but it's true because you're going to hear each week experts talking about what happens when we meditate. What happens when we take ayahuasca? Ayahuasca is plant medicine. What happens when we learn to do yoga? Why is cannabis such an important healing tool? And then other things, like we'll get into some occult without getting into craziness, but we'll do some occult. And as much as I am not a happy fan with ancient aliens, I am an avid interest in the UFO alien phenomenon. I'm a little burnt out with the flying saucers in the air. And you've heard me say it many times. It's like, you know, quit flying around, this is where I'm at. Land your craft, get out, say hello. Now, there are books out there that said, and report that in the late 50s, 58, I think it's 58 or 59, Dwight Eisenhower, the president of the time, met with off-world types in the Mojave Desert of California. No way to verify that. I mean, that's ultra top secret, but the rumor goes that a treaty was signed. And we don't know what that treaty is. Tons and tons and tons of speculation. But I will have on the program experts occasionally speaking on UFO phenomena. In fact, my guest in about a week, author named Alan Sheffield, and he wrote a book on the final word on governmental knowledge of UFOs. And I mean, I know Alan, but I'm going to be tough on him. It's like, why write a book on the same thing that we've known about for 40 years, you know? So my knowledge is a benefit for you, the listener, because you can't throw anything at me that I haven't heard before, you know? And I love it. I love it. I love Destiny, and I've been wanting to do it. I mean, it is filled with, like I said, these are top-notch people. These are not people who have just learned something. They've been around and they've done their homework. They're either leading experts or they've written best-selling books that were peer-reviewed. And occasionally we'll have people that have written papers, papers that have been reviewed or published, and the reaction has been positive. So I think you're going to enjoy the ride. And I think the more you listen to Destiny, you'll realize that it's not a fit for Earth Ancients. It's something else. And that's why we have it on Wednesday and why I've let people know that, you know, listen, and it's not your cup of tea, you don't have to listen. You know, you could turn it off and go somewhere else. But I can guarantee you we'll have provocative, cutting edge theme material. And the people who are on the program will be excellent, and I'll have a great time. So it's a way for me to distill 30 years of program development and kind of spin it off in a way that I find important, and I think you will too. Now, I really appreciate it when you write in and say, Cliff, this was fantastic, or Cliff, this guy was off his rocker, or what she had to say didn't resonate with me. You know, let me know. Let me know. We're not in an audience. We're not in a conference hall sitting together, and I can't grab the microphone and go, hey, what'd you think of this? What'd you think of that? Da-da-da-da-da. The only way I can determine that the show was a success, or it was, transformational, tools for transformation, or it was, it was good or bad, is when you write in. And you can write in I don't have at this point, a direct email for Destiny, but send me an email at cliff@earthancients.com. Let me know what you're thinking. The other thing to do, and, right now, we're in the process of creating a logo for Destiny, and we'll have it up on the Earth Ancients page, and then eventually Destiny will have its own Facebook page so that's not overlapping Earth Ancients. But when you see the banner with the weekly guest and it says Destiny, hey, leave a comment underneath the banner. Many times I'll post an article the person, the guest on Destiny referenced. I like to show little galleries of images. And in some cases, we'll have video and soundtracks where they apply. So please let me know, because that's the only way that I can get a sense that this is something that you're enjoying and you appreciate it, or it's not your cup of tea, and here's why. So, oh, and I promise not to be political. I got in a lot of trouble when I was when the presidential elections were going on. I very outspoken, We won't get into the details, but a lot of people left their unhappiness on iTunes. They gave me, some people gave me both barrels, you know. So anyhow, Destiny is the program. It is on the Earth Ancients feed every Wednesday, and we are moving forward. I'm enjoying it. Our team is enjoying it. And, and by the way, Dr. Pepper Hernandez, who wrote the foreword to my book, Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men, has a segment on each program. It's called Conversations on Cannabis. And she's one of the experts who utilizes CBD and other cannabis-based products in her practice for healing. And if you listen in every week, you'll know that she is really keeping her hand on the pulse of what's happening in the United States as cannabis becomes legal. And it seems like every month or every 60 days, the governing body of a new state has voted to either make it available medicinally, which is medical marijuana, or hopefully at some point they are voting to make it recreational. There are so many benefits. Dr. Hernandez lives in Oklahoma, and Oklahoma just reported for the first, I think it was the first quarter, first 3 or 4 months of the year 2021, over $1 billion in profits from cannabis sales. So that's huge for a state. And I want to see more states adapt or adopt this recreational use of cannabis, because not only does it allow people to purchase it legally, but it also opens the door for more research. And this is one thing that we're discovering, that the chemical compounds within cannabis are extremely powerful. They're extremely beneficial. And if we can wean somebody off of opioids for pain management, for nerve disorder, neurological disorder, MS, arthritis, problems with the central nervous system, it is a huge plus for us. And I can say this, that I do know of a couple of universities here in California that are beginning to do in-depth studies because they can get cannabis. See, the big problem in the past was, because it was federally outlawed, and nationally, it's still a problem, but because it was federally outlawed, these research institutes couldn't get their hands on a supply to do the important testing. So that is slowly being freed up, and we are beginning to see the results in data analysis, in patient studies, CBD for humans. And we also know that it's excellent for animals, especially dogs. Dogs appear to be benefactor for the properties within cannabis. So that's just another segment each Wednesday on Destiny. And we are moving forward with the cannabis side of it because it's that important. I mean, after being the director of the Cannabis Summit for 3 years, which was also part of my duties as a program director for New Living Expo, I came away so impressed and actually shocked that more information that wasn't presented, that I wrote the book Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy in about 4 months. I mean, I just spit it. It just came through. And my publisher was like, wow, okay, yeah, we want to take this. And that's Inner Traditions, which is Simon & Schuster, who's the distributor of their book. So I'm going to do a full segment on that in the spring of next year, 2022. So I love it. All right, we have a special program. We're talking about Christ's mother, Mary Magdalene, and the sacred texts of Mary and her profound gifts that are not talked about in the Bible, that are excluded. And I think you're going to find this a fascinating talk. So onward.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Checking in again with Dr. Pepper Hernandez in our conversations on cannabis. And today, I wanted to get kind of the fundamentals out of the way. And when I say fundamentals, you know, what is cannabis? You know, what's the difference between smoking it with THC and using it with CBD? Those are two entirely different aspects of the plant. And but they're both important for a lot of people. And as cannabis becomes more legal, more available throughout the United States, those of you listening will want to have a good foundation so you can go out and get what you need from this amazing plant. Pepper, how you doing?
Hi there, Cliff. I'm doing so well. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm doing great. So let's do a real basic overview, if you would, on cannabis. Now, when someone goes to a dispensary, for the most part, they're going for what? They're going for some. They're going for a psychoactive product, right?
Not necessarily. CBD, which is the non-psychoactive part, can be sold anywhere in our country,
okay.
But it is also found in dispensaries, especially high-quality CBD made or derived from cannabis. Mm-hmm. But I would probably say typically the most people that are going in are looking for THC form of either a salve or a concentrate or a tincture or even flower smoking preferably.
Right. So flower is, well, that's my preference. But in states that don't have dispensaries, how are they going to find a CBD product? What would you suggest?
How would they find a CBD product?
Yeah. I mean, is CBD legal in all states?
It is legal in all states of our country currently.
Okay.
The one thing I would suggest is probably unless your state is growing cannabis and you know the farmer or they're growing like hemp and they're getting CBD derived from that hemp, then probably not purchase your CBD at the convenience stores. That's going to be my one big thing.
Because. Why not the convenience stores?
Good question. So there is cannabis or CBD that's derived from cannabis or hemp, and then there is synthetic isolate CBD. And we don't want to have that in our bodies, more or less, as far as a tincture form, or when I want to purchase that. So we want really good quality CBD, which means that you're going to have to look at the label, make sure that it's full spectrum, which means that they're using the flower of the plant to create that CBD. Make sure it's a local source, local to your community, so you're paying the farmers in your community. And just make sure it's organic and it's from a sustainable farm. So we want to look at these products in a really eye-opening way, at just as we would our vegetables from the farm.
Okay, so those are all really good things that I agree on, but if they're in a state that doesn't have any farming community growing cannabis, what would be the next best option?
The next best option would probably be to look online. There are a lot of really good companies that source from organic, healthy, sustainable communities that send those tinctures. I think tinctures may be the only thing. You might not be able to get concentrate, but you'd be able to get tinctures across state lines because it's legal.
Okay. So let's talk right now. We're going to focus on CBD because that's one of your specialties.
Sure.
Let's talk about the effects of CBD. So if I have a chronic issue or health concern, tell us what CBD would be good for helping.
Sure. So let's talk about cannabinoids. And there are multiple cannabinoids, and CBD just happens to be one of those primary cannabinoids. It's non-psychoactive. That's why I personally use it. It has been known to be used for anxiety, inflammation, epilepsy, arthritis. There's quite a bit of things and ailments that CBD is being used for now. That's being supported by research, which is great. My personal usage with CBD has been mostly with anxiety, epilepsy, and reproductive health.
Okay. So can you just give us a list? Because I know people that have arthritis use CBD, people that have certain types of connective tissue issues sometimes use CBD. So is there like an area, because I think people think that CBD is good for everything that ails you, and that's not true, is it?
Well, it's not necessarily true. What it does is it helps with the endocannabinoid system, which balances homeostasis in the whole body. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at CBD and it being the better version, if you're wanting a non-psychoactive product, it's going to be helpful for muscular and skeletal structure and your digestive system, nervous system, endocrine system, circulatory system. When you're talking about that, I mean, that's every system in the body, which then means it's
pretty
is
amazing.
Beneficial for everything.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I can give you a list of all the different ones, you know, that it's been researched and linked to help, but really, whenever you look at your body systems and look at the things that it can help, I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Okay. Now, this is great because this is your sweet spot, is the CBD, you know, products, how it works, the benefits. And obviously, a natural product is not going to have the residue effect of an opioid or any other drug that someone's using to relieve a symptom or a problem. So... And this is what I think the real benefits of using a cannabis product is that there is a natural support, a natural balance that is brought to the system when you use these products, right?
Yes. Yeah, the body balances
exactly.
itself. So it
right.
brings in homeostasis to the body, which is why the endocrine system is so important. And a lot of people say, oh, cannabis just heals everything, or it's known to heal everything. That's not right. necessarily the truth. What it is it saturates the endocannabinoid system, which every animal on the planet has an endocannabinoid system. Mm-hmm. So why don't we saturate it and heal ourselves naturally? It just makes sense to me anyhow.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. In the few minutes we have left, I have to ask you this question.
Sure.
Is there a benefit of getting high with, I mean, I have a feeling for it. I mean, when I'm shifted, taking cannabis, I actually connect with a very high source or a part of me that is not necessarily conscious to me in my waking state. But what do you say about the plant as a form of powerful medicine?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I think that's a whole other podcast, but
it will be. we're giving people a highlight.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, THC being one of the cannabinoids in the cannabis plant, right? There are multiple that we're looking at, but just THC is the only one that's a psychoactive piece. So that particular cannabinoid, when you're intaking it in a spiritual way or in a conscious way or with intention, which is the way it should be, just like anything else, absolutely you can have things come up to the surface or shifts that are happening in your consciousness. Now, THC is known to help with pain relief and stress. So if you're not having those things in your life and you're wanting a spiritual experience, I would say that could happen. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right. Yeah, we have, as we continue on our discussion and conversations on cannabis, we will cover a ton of material. Those of you listening, we want to make this available to you. If you have a question, if you have a concern about anything having to do with cannabis, you can send in questions. You can send it in to cliff@earthancients.com. We will have another number eventually, but send it in to us, and we will have Dr. Pepper Hernandez address it. So thank you very much for that. All right. Hey, Dr. Pepper, thank you. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much, Cliff. It was wonderful
talk to
chatting
you next
with
time.
You. Okay.
In the annuals of the Bible, there are a number of noted passages that are both stunning and amazing to the reader. We have Moses parting the Red Sea. We have the man Jesus feeding the multitudes, healing the blind, all these acts that are miraculous. But one of the I would say perhaps the most fascinating miracle is the Immaculate Conception. And the whole birth of Christ is almost like a fairy tale to many of us. I mean, I read the Bible. I was taught about the conception, the Immaculate Conception of this Virgin Mary. And I was always fascinated by it. We now have evidence with my guest today of a sacred journey of conception. And it isn't so much that it is an immaculate conception. There's more to it today. My guest is the author. She is an expert. Her name is Marguerite Rigel-Yozo, who has written a fabulous book called The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, Mary and the Lineage of Virgin Births. This is a fascinating look at the whole concept of virgin births and how it goes about, the ancient background about it, and other details. Marguerite, thanks for joining us.
Cliff, it's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me, and welcome to all of the listeners.
Okay. This is fascinating. What was the motivation? And I must say, you must have found some very telling material to write these books on this topic. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, because this is my third book.
Right.
The first two are heavily scholarly, heavily annotated and documented, and they focus on women's practice of divine birth in ancient Greece. And the first one is the cult of divine birth in ancient Greece. And the second book is Virgin Mother Goddesses of Antiquity. Mm-hmm. And in those books, I outline the whole concept and all of the evidence behind the idea that in Greco-Roman antiquity and really beyond, going to the Levant coast, North Africa, and really this goes around the world, there have been priestesses dedicated to practicing divine birth as an advanced shamanic practice of women, the purpose of which was to bring in particularly high holy souls to the planet that were thought to not be able to incarnate through the regular union between men and women, but could only come this way with a very high spiritual woman engaging her own abilities, her own siddhic abilities to self-conceive, in so doing, becoming one with the goddess of the universe and being able to draw in an astral soul, a being of a very high level. And the intention here was to bring these beings in to help the planet advance or get out of some kind of hole that they had dug themselves into, which was pretty deeply the case around about the time, 4 BC or so, when it is thought that Jesus was conceived by Mary. And so The idea with the third book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, is turning the floodlights onto Mother Mary and her lineage. Turns out that if you know how to look in her correct gospel, called the Infancy Gospel of James, originally known as the Birth of Mary, Mary herself was divinely born of her mother, who did not have any sexual union with a man to give birth to Mary. Mary's aunt, Elizabeth, also did not have any sexual union to bring forth John the Baptist. And their ancestor, Sarah, the so-called wife of Abraham, did not have any sexual union, most likely, to bring in Isaac from that famous story. Okay. So we're talking about, and there are more Hebrew women on top of this. We're talking about a history, tradition, and lineages of divine birth that as a practice that was passed on among women of families, along family lines.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find this data in esoteric texts? I mean, was it in the Book of Enoch, one of these chapters that was removed from the original Bible? Because what you've discovered is a profound practice. It's a sacred practice that I've never heard of before. Would you say the writers of the Bible knew about this, or is this something that they kind of glossed over?
I think they knew about it and glossed over it, because what I find in those other first two books that I mentioned, as well as in other books that I researched, if you just look at ancient histories, as well as legend, which is often just a cover for a history that was forgotten, and myths, which often are also actual histories, you find evidence that these women were practicing various types of non-ordinary miraculous conception. From parthenogenesis, meaning the simple single woman doing this practice, to then astral sexual encounters with non-embodied male beings, to special hierogamos rituals between holy men and women, and other methods, all of which resulted in a special high-level pregnancy. So the information, the data that I'm drawing on is, and yes, we see indications of this type of thing in Genesis, where we see the daughters of men, men who were basically rape seduced by the watchers
or the Anunnaki. The
God. Okay.
Yeah.
The Anunnaki leading to the birth of the Nephilim. We see it in other various apocryphal types and Gnostic gospels. The Apocalypse of Adam is one such. The Testament of the 12 Patriarchs. You see these kinds of pieces of evidence, as well as, again, The history of ancient Greece talks about Plato, Pythagoras, and Alexander. You know, these ancient historical writers were saying that they were known to have been conceived divinely by their mothers through unions with various gods in a disembodied fashion. The Egyptian pharaohs were said to have been born in this way. By at this point, the practice had degenerated, and it was now the woman engaging in sexual relations with the male king or pharaoh. So it was a kind of a co-opted event by that time. But it was thought that this was a divine birth because the god would come through the body of the pharaoh, and the result would be the next pharaoh in line.
Yeah.
So really all over the world, we have this story in various Native American traditions. For example, the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois Confederacy have as their one of their major figures was the peacemaker, who brought the five and six warring nations together because he was divinely conceived by his mother, Gehetasuk. And, you know, all over the world, there are these types of stories. Also, you know that you're getting into a divine birth story when it's an anomalous type of birth, like Buddha coming from the side of his mother. That's usually talking about a miraculous type of conception as well. You know, so we have these stories all over the world. Mary is not the first, and she's not the last.
Okay, I want to get into some of these other people, like the pharaohs that you write about. But yeah. I got to ask you this: what the heck is Joseph doing with a celibate virgin? That whole story a falsehood of them?
Like a third of his age, okay?
Yeah.
So where we find the mother load of information about Mother Mary's conception, infancy, childhood, and conception of Jesus, again, is in this document called The Infancy Gospel of James. It's been named that by scholars, but again, it was originally called Birth of Mary, and it might be very, very old. It could be an eyewitness account written by one of the sons of this Joseph by a previous marriage. He was a widower when he was assigned in this gospel by Zechariah, the high priest of the temple, who was the consort of Elizabeth, who gave birth to John the Baptist. He was assigned not so much by Zechariah, but by divine decree, because there was a ritual that was done to see who is it who should be the guardian of this young Parthenos, this young girl who's coming out of the temple now after all of this training. This gospel talks about her training first in her mother's bedroom sanctuary. And then at 3 years old, she went to the temple for training, probably until she was about 12. And somewhere between 12 and 15 or 16, this conception ritual took place.
Let me just interrupt you real quickly. This is not Hebrew. This must be some pagan ritual, some sacred pagan ritual, right?
Well, it may well have been a Hebrew ritual because it is being described as being part of the Hebrew temple tradition.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So yeah. It could have been suppressed. Or I had one person who said to me, are they really talking about the Essenes, or are they talking about people in the traditional Hebrew temple? And I said, it's not entirely clear, but there is evidence that this could be about something going on in the actual Hebrew temples. And then after this whole thing happens, the conception happens, which I talk about extensively in the book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. They need to know what to do with Mary. Actually, they send her off in this gospel. They send her off when she starts menstruating. It's seen as taboo. She can't be in the temple. So Zechariah goes into the Holy of Holies and he's given the message. There's going to be a sign given to you when you call all the widowers of the town. And the sign is that when each of the widowers gets their staffs back from Zechariah, a dove appears out of this staff and perches on the head of Joseph. And that's the sign that he is to take care of this virgin who is very young. And he's an older man, who knows, probably 40s, whatever, maybe 50s. And he says, this is ridiculous. I can't take this girl. And Zechariah really prevails. He says, look, this has been God's will. You've got to take this girl. And he's sort of a reluctant caretaker. And in this gospel, the conception of Jesus takes place in his house while Mary is weaving, which is a sign and a symbol for the ritual that she and these other women are engaging in of divine conception. Mm-hmm. But Joseph is off on a carpentry job. So he doesn't really get with the program until after he comes back, finds out that she's pregnant, and an angel has to come to him in his dream to tell him, don't worry, she has not been made pregnant by any man. This is a divine conception. That's when he fully gets with the program and decides to be her guardian for the rest of the adventures and travails that they go through.
Talk a little bit about the conception. So if Mary was schooled in the sacred art of conceiving with an entity, does she have a vote into who she's going to conceive with? Does she have any say, or are these one of these divine events where she's more of a womb to produce a child, and her wants and needs are secondary?
Right. Well, this is a very astute question. First of all, she is engaged, as I analyze this text, not in a sacred union with an astral being. She is engaged in the highest level of divine birth, which is pure parthenogenesis, meaning pure conception in and of herself. No male entities or humans of any kind are involved. She is able to produce the needed state with the needed erotic heat and the needed androgyny in her womb to spark this divine conception. So we are talking about probably the highest holy woman who ever walked the planet. And she manifested it in the ability to conceive an extremely high level avatar God to come into human form. Okay. Now, So that was her method. Now, in terms of whether she was able to call on a particular soul from the ethers, this seems to be a kind of co-creative process with the divine. I talk in this gospel about that she becomes one with the cosmos, and it's a divine feminine cosmos, the Sophia energy.
But I guess my question is, as a priestess, she was trained in these priestly rites. And we're going to get into the evolution of consciousness in mankind in a minute here, conceiving and having these pharaohs and other important people come down that kind of move humanity forward. But I just want to get a sense of her being at this young age and somebody acknowledging her as the being she is, to be able to support and conceive of a Christ figure, a Messiah, eventually Messiah. Who makes that decision?
Here's the thing. I mean, first of all, she was conscious. She did will this. She did will this to happen. Mm-hmm. In terms of pulling in the soul, she's in a co-creative partnership with Divine Mother Goddess Creator. Okay. So she's not orchestrating the show to that degree, but she is orchestrating the show in that she decided that she wanted to bring in a high holy avatar. Again, she's part of a lineage. These women are trained in this. She was already divinely conceived by her mother Anne, meaning she's already an extremely high level avatar.
Yeah, I was going to say
this is not her first life on the earth plane at all. And for this, I really draw in some of the work of Sri Kaleshwar, one of the major Hindu saints who has crossed over to the other side, but he's left a lot of information about Mother Mary from ancient palm leaf manuscripts, as well as his own past life recall. And that Mother Mary was very conscious about what she was doing. She had, like I said, her mother was trained in this. Sarah before her was trained in this. Elizabeth was trained in this. These are tools and techniques. And Sarah was already training Mary from the time she was an infant in Sarah, Anne is already training Mary from infancy in Anne's bedroom. She brings in these high holy virgins from the temple to do these purification processes and teachings with Mary. And when they bring her to the temple, she's already so advanced that she starts doing a ritual dance at 3 years old. And they are completely enamored of her. But she's known, the family is known to be able to do this. You see, this is what I'm reading between the lines about in this gospel and cross-referencing it with so much of the research that I've done in my other books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to decipher the codes of this infancy gospel. And then she receives severe teachings from the priestesses in the temple, the same ones who have probably been training her in her mother's sanctuary, take her to the temple. And she goes through who knows what from the time she's 3 until 12. But clearly, it's involving technologies and using the interface of light, quantum light, sound, and sacred medicines, most likely. So she, the way it's described, it sounds like she's already in communication with the angelic realms. Mm-hmm. So that by the time she gets involved in this ritual that is called together by the high priest, Zechariah, she knows all the codes and what to do. And these other, there are 7 other women in a ritual with her. This is what I discern in this gospel. So they're all contributing together to this energy. And she and Anne and Elizabeth are the ones who conceive out of this ritual. But we're talking about a high level shamanic art.
Yeah, definitely. Very high. What age would you suggest she was when she conceived?
Anywhere between 12 and 16 years old. That's what we get.
That's young for our age today. So people didn't live very long back then. So perhaps that is early middle age for us today. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I would say she was pretty much well understood to be a maiden. She's just past the typical time of menstruation, but there's indications that she may not have been menstruating. Actually, I talk about that these divine birth priestesses may have been so purified that they did not need the monthly physical purification. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she was considered young. It was her mother who conceived her at an advanced age and Elizabeth who conceived John the Baptist at an advanced age mm-hmm. and Sarah who conceived Isaac. These are women who are ages past traditional childbearing years. We would consider them postmenopausal. But again, if they are not menstruating their whole lives because they are specialized priestesses, it doesn't really matter anyway. But those women were not able to conceive divinely until later in life. Mary is such a high being and she's got such an advantage already being divinely born that she's able to bring in a very high level avatar as a young woman, very young.
Okay. Let's talk about the actual act of conception. Is it your understanding that as a priestess, she's able to communicate with these other realms and through her communication and whatever else, a being or an energy, she agrees to work with this energy. And through some process, which I'd like to hear from you, she is impregnated.
Yes. So she conceives, which is different from being impregnated. In other words, she self-generates this within her. Okay.
Can you describe that? Because
what I do in the book is I do the best I can using the available symbols and signs mm-hmm. in the gospel to point to what was happening. And what we can discern is, again, these women are in a weaving ritual. This is already telling us that they are weaving and working with DNA at very quantum levels. The weaving is just an exterior symbol of an interior process of spinning and knitting together that they are involved in with their eggs, okay, Aunt Mary and Elizabeth. They are generating erotic heat. So they're using the fire element and the light element.
Mm-hmm.
They may be using sound technology. I talk about various points of evidence that they might have been using some kind of sound frequencies or tonings, and they may have been using sacred medicines to amplify and enhance their state.
Mm-hmm.
So these are clues as to what the sequence of technologies would have been that these women were using in their body, mind, spirit to engender this siddhi, this siddhic ability. It's a known term as a miraculous ability that various saints have been attributed to doing in the past, in the present, you know, doing things like cutting off their hand and putting them back, not casting shadows, dying and coming back to life,
yeah,
taking out their bowels and putting them back in. So this technology is a very high level one for women only, because they are the only ones who have the womb and they can conceive and gestate a child in a non-ordinary way. So she's working with the light matter consciousness interface. Okay, that's what's happening here. And yes, there are angelic beings that are associated with the process, namely the angel Gabriel. He's called Gabriel in this gospel, this infancy gospel, as well as in the canonical gospels, he is named. There is a guiding, these are guiding forces on the other side in the non-physical dimension that are assisting these women and that are assisting Mary, letting them know how it's going. Yes, you've achieved it. Congratulations. Your name will be lauded all over the world. And the soul that Mary brings in, you know, I'm going to talk about this more in a future book, but Sri Kaleshwar says that it was the first incarnation of Jesus on this planet. He was a new soul. So he was woven in through this deep metaphysical action of this woman having her eggs and her consciousness interface with the divine cosmic Sophia to conceive a male being in her own body who is at such a high advanced level, mm-hmm, yet can come into human incarnation. That we're talking about the greatest mystery and miracle ever.
It is. It's a huge mystery.
This book is allowing people to make sense of it at long last, instead of saying, oh, this is just something we have to accept by faith. It doesn't make any sense. It's totally counterbiological. And then half the people are like, this isn't real because it's not, couldn't even happen. You know, so I'm veering the ship and saying, no, it could have happened. Here's how it could have happened. Here's why it would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
How, where, when, and, you know, what it produced with what effects in the nature. Because once you start setting out something like this into the nature, that's a very high light being, the equal and opposite negative dark will show up, which is what happened with this whole holy family. And they had to go through a nightmare of the crucifixion.
Yeah. You hint at the evolution of the human species through these types of conception and then births. I'm just curious to know, in the lineage of these super beings or these avatars, as you call them, is there somebody higher on the food chain or some unseen force that is suggesting that Mary have this avatar being? You hinted also that there's noted pharaohs that may have been conceived and born in the same manner. So
that's right.
If there's
similar, yeah. I mean, no, Mary and her female ancestors willed this.
Hmm.
They are the ones in charge of this. And this is the missing ingredient from the entire religious institutional history.
Yeah.
Making it look like she's just a passive vessel to whom this accidentally happens. No. There were trainings, there were intentions, there were high-level spiritual protocols and meanings. And these women were highly connected with divine levels of vibration. They saw what was going on with the planet. And they said, whoa, we really need to bring in some higher vibrational beings here to help out this human realm, because they are going down the chute. Okay. And it's still happening today in an even worse way. But to the minds of many, it's coming to a head now. And I think this is why the veil is being unlifted, lifted off of the divine birth practice, precisely at the time when some people say the greatest attack is afoot on humanity and this planet.
Fascinating. You mentioned that in the New Kingdom, this Immaculate Conception, I just, you know, talked about it, may have been the result and creation of a number of noted pharaohs. Do you have any noted names, any well-known pharaohs that may have been or were hinted to have been conceived in this matter?
All of them. All of the historical pharaohs were said to have been born in this way from the time that the pharaonic line is recorded around 3000 BC, and including there was a female pharaoh, Hatshepsut.
Oh, yeah.
Who said to have been divinely born or claimed that she was, you know. So, this was really something. I mean, we see it also in the story of Isis, Osiris, and Horus. Horus is like the first archetypal pharaoh. He's born divinely from Isis having sex with a Osiris who's already on the other side, and she has to fashion an artificial phallus for him, a dildo. So there may have been certain rituals that were involving sacred phalluses for the women to have this conception happen. Mary would not have needed a sacred phallus. It was self-sufficient in and of herself, the true definition of virginity, of virgin, of parthenos, okay, the Greek term parthenos. So this is how these pharaohs were said to have been born. I mean, I talk more about this in my dissertation, which is called Bearing the Holy Ones. And if anybody wants to look up this dissertation through your library and order it through interlibrary loan, there's a chapter on the Egyptian queens and how they made this come through according to the bas-reliefs and the inscriptions in ancient Egypt.
Fascinating. Also talk about sacred marriages with male gods. Are these etheric beings, or what type of entity are they that would cohabitate with a human woman?
Yes, they are etheric beings. So what I find is that the practice of divine birth started out as parthenogenesis, pure self-conception by woman. And then it gradually was taken over and degenerated. The next phase is these etheric beings kind of sniff out a woman's parthenogenetic process and rape seduce her at the last moment to insert their energy into her womb to make this conception and this child be part their energy. And this is in a way how patriarchy came onto the planet, actually. And then there was that later stage in Egypt where now you have to have a human male who embodies that etheric god, because the practices have been lost. The priestesses can no longer even do the old way, or they've been prevented from doing it. And besides which, the male pharaohs want to claim the child, because once you get a human male involved, you've got sperm and you can claim the child for a male lineage. Whereas before, you could only claim the child for the female lineages. That becomes increasingly threatening to patriarchy, right? Mm. But in the intermediary stage where these women are cavorting with male gods, at first this was not wanted by these priestesses. They felt invaded. They were raped. There was often a seduction or a trickery. Some of the stories of Zeus changing form in order to seduce this one and that one. It's trickery so that the woman would be in a divine birth process of conception. And all of a sudden they'd be tricked by Zeus coming in to look like, for example, a shower of light, which is the technology by which the woman would conceive. But all of a sudden now it's this male Anunnaki energy coming into the shower of light. And then boom, you know, Danai conceives Perseus in this way. It's a travesty. It's a misuse. And then these women started cultivating the process. As patriarchy developed, the pressures became so big, they succumbed. The women succumbed. And so you have someone such as the likes of Olympias, the mother of Alexander, who willingly engaged in a sexual relating union with the god Zeus Amun in this total Anunnaki form and conceived Alexander. And there were various oracles that affirmed that, yes, your child is divinely conceived in this way, et cetera, et cetera. So they started cultivating this practice as it was degenerating, you know, with these Anunnaki beings. And then there were also, like I said, just the regular old human women who started being seduced or raped by these astral watchers, you know, and that engendered the Nephilim or some of the giants onto the planet. You know, these big giants that we see evidence of in the records of, you know, Egypt and other places, Easter Island, whatever. You know, a lot of these are because these beings would know how to work with the light matter biology interface and get this physical pregnancy going. And then these beings that get born, they're little acorns, but they grow into giants. Right. So you have the giant race. You know, it's complex and it's probably even way more complex and nuanced than that. But I'm just giving people the beginnings of understanding around everything we've been looking at. And then, you know, the end of this is just the pure alien abduction.
Yeah, but you actually present some very interesting and compelling language that it's your belief that when these divine beings come forth, it's also a form of human evolution. So if mankind is in a poor place, we manifest a Christ or a Muhammad or a Buddha at a right time, and all of a sudden we begin to look at our humanity differently. Wouldn't you say that's what your point is?
Well, here's the thing. Because we're in duality, it can be used for and by the light and for and by the dark. So at its highest, this is why you need the priestesses to be at such a high level of integrity, because the minute they start slipping, they're going to start bringing in different beings. They're going to acquiesce to rapes by Anunnaki, whatever they're going to do, and bring in the beings, marauders of patriarchy, rather than the Christs and the Platos and the Pythagoras that were said to have been born in this way. Okay. So it's a mixed bag. And then at the worst, you get demonic seed, which could well be what these Illuminati families have been doing.
Or are you suggesting that's how a person like Adolf Hitler came through?
Well, you know, potentially we don't know what was involved in his conception, but we can surmise that some of these families are bringing in reptilian beings, you know, in different ways, shapeshifters and whatnot. And this is one of the greatest hidden secret things of all.
I mean, your great work in these books is discovering this priestess class that is training women to work with these levels of consciousness. Perhaps even the Akashic records are interplayed in this in some way. And using this and being of such a high nature themselves that they recognize what they're doing and they work with a noted being or force or whatever that produces an avatar And then as that practice dwindles, then we have the rapes and the conceptions with beings that are not necessarily helpful. And God knows what happens after that.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I think this is all being revealed now. But the thing is that when women engage in this at the highest levels, they are master guardians of this planet. And that's what I'm laying all of this out, so that we can resurrect and return this ability to women, who are the gatekeepers anyway for all of the souls coming in and out, a process that we've lost. It's been hidden. We haven't understood that we can be the guardians and gatekeepers and bring in more conscious beings and say no to certain other beings, that this is even, you know, it's been veiled that some of this stuff is even going on. And so women, this is the time of the awakening of the womb and the consciousness regarding the womb, its powers, and women as the holy guardians of this planet once more.
Fascinating. You mentioned the suppression of Mother Mary's gospel. Why was it suppressed, do you think?
Well, so this gospel, which is the basis of this book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, it is what I analyze throughout every page of the book to show who Mary was, who her lineage was, what was going on, how it cross-references with all the other priestesshoods in the ancient Mediterranean world and beyond. This gospel was considered apocrypha by the Council of Nicaea in the 5th century of the Common Era, when they made a decision, yes or no, what was going into the official canon of the Bible. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Philip, and, you know, whatever, a few other things made it into the New Testament. And the rest were thrown out. Some of these things were outright burned throughout the years and are no more. This one somehow lingered around. And I determined that it's because the writer was able to kind of hide certain things so that it seemed more of an absurd story rather than anything terribly, terribly threatening.
You're talking about the process of conceiving the divine.
I'm talking about the way this gospel was written.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so I think that this author, James, who was probably one of the sons of Joseph by a previous marriage when his original wife was alive, is an eyewitness to these various things that are being described, or was very privy to what Mary told him and wrote it down. And the Catholic Church turned it into, you know, a fairy tale, yet in the Orthodox Eastern tradition, this was used in liturgy. And in the Orthodox West, or the Roman Catholic West, a lot of the stories of Mary that you see in like stained glass and that you hear about in the feast days are taken precisely from this gospel, like the presentation of Mary in the temple. Mary's own miraculous conception, right? The birth date of Mary, right? You know, all these things. And none of that information is in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John or anywhere in the New Testament. It's in here. So somehow this gospel sort of like halfway made it into legitimacy, and it stuck around. In the early days of Christianity, it was considered a gospel. It was the basis for, you know, Marian veneration and so forth and so on. But then, you know, as things progressed, as I said, it was thrown kind of on the rubbish heap, and some documents were able to survive.
It was edited out like so many other chapters.
Well, and that's the thing. There's evidence of scribal tampering and editing on it that careful scholars look at. And I talk about that in this book. So that sometimes we have to work back to what was the original even version of this gospel. Okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
this is a little side note, but I think you address it because, you know, you're helping not only men, but women understand their sacredness in the ability to conceive a being. But what does this information that you've found convey to women and the conception and birth process?
This understanding that women could have the capacity to parthenogenetically conceive out of their own body or use different types of technologies aside from regular sexual union suggests that even women who are engaged in sexual union can bring it up to a whole new level. In other words, it opens the doors to the capacities of the womb, the abilities of human women, and the powers, you know, that they have and that their womb structure has to work all sorts of magic on the planet. So as an accompaniment to this book, I also teach the Holy Womb Chakra teachings.
I was just going to ask you must have picked up some knowledge.
Yes, which transfer. Is from the ancient palm leaf manuscripts of India. Mm-hmm. And I've been certified to teach this material from the Divine Mother Center and Sri Kaleshwar to transmit the mantras, yantras, and esoteric understandings as basically an entire part of this divine birthing. And Sri Kaleshwar gives two mantras that a couple can use to conceive a very high level being themselves. And that tradition also talks about divine birth as being real. Paramahansa Yogananda. Okay. Yogananda also talks about this in his books. So there is a whole training of ancient sound technologies, mantras and visualizations, drawings, yantras, that can deeply empower women and men. I've had women and men take this course to really purify, clear, and empower the womb for it to be the organ and channeler, not only for conception of children, but conception of esoteric oracle information, projects, artwork, and healing. Because the culmination of this, according to Sri Kaleshwar, is that Mother Mary not only divinely conceived Jesus, she divinely transmuted him through her womb at his crucifixion so that he could be reborn.
Hmm.
And there's a very esoteric tradition that he talks about, that Jesus actually was reborn through her womb, and the yogas that both of them were involved in, these very high level yogas of the soul, you know, positing the soul somewhere else when the body is dismembered, coming back to life and so forth, that it was her womb power that allowed this resurrection to actually happen.
Wow. Amazing. I mentioned the question about the sacred, you know, ritual to go in to conceive like this. I do know the Maya thousands of years ago in various temples had a practice where young women were chosen based on their aptitude to be temple priestess.
Yes.
And that they had intercourse on certain times of the year to have a certain type of child. And it seems like they had a similar knowledge to what you're speaking on of understanding the ethos in such a way that you could bring in a divine child or a leader or somebody who moves along in humanity.
That's right. I mean, and clearly this was known all over the world at the highest levels of the priestess and priest function. And conception is a no-brainer in terms of a place where the divine human interface must take place, and there must be great consciousness around it, and it can be used in various ways for good and ill and so forth. So there are numerous priestesshoods all over the world. So you're talking about the Mayans. We have the Aztec Virgins of the Sun. I've long wanted to explore what that is, and I bet somebody will get a wonderful dissertation or series of books if they start digging into that and applying all the codes that I've laid out in these books to that understanding. So, yes, I mean, these we are talking about our highest level priests and priestesses and shamans on the planet have been involved in these kinds of activities because it is about bringing in consciousness to the planet, bringing in higher beings who can then go on to guide us in new ways.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating what you've written because, and you hinted on it, you know, perhaps this is how Alexander the Great was conceived and born. This is Aristotle, all these, what you can consider the movers and shakers of ancient history, even to present day, you know, how do we know that Einstein wasn't conceived with some divine force, you know? It's just... Right. The possibilities are quite endless.
They are, because a lot of times mothers will have miraculous dreams, or they'll have, you know, this divine conception continues on into the present day. I've known women or of women who have conceived in miraculous ways with varying results with their children. And I know women who intend to resurrect this practice. They're working their bodies right now. And there will be a next generation of women who perhaps are even more capable of doing this. More of the codes will be in place. More of the ethics will be in place because you really want a high level priestess to be doing this. You don't want just anyone or somebody who has a lot of ego or is doing it for the wrong reasons or is bringing, has, you know, partial information and is bringing in the wrong kinds of beings, et cetera.
Yeah, I would think the church has a real problem with your whole concept of Immaculate Conception.
Well, you know, it's such a paradox because in a way, divine birth is the very reason for the existence of the church to begin with.
Exactly.
And if they wanted to embrace this, they could justify, finally give the justification. But because I think oftentimes they're not really about that. They're really about control of masses rather than liberation. They may not be, the leaders may not be that interested in this or, you know, maybe actually opposed to it. I don't know. And really, that's not my business because I'm focusing on the people who are interested in this. I get very little in the way of guff. Because people who want to give me guff basically turn the other way.
Yeah.
They, you know, so I'm all about people who find that this is fascinating, who are in the timeline that Jesus and Mary lived, who are in the timeline that this is all real and they want to take it to new levels. There are many people who are not in that timeline. More power to them. That's not their initiation in this lifetime.
Hmm. Can you give a case study or an example of, and you can guess at this because it's hard in present times or even in the last few hundred years, of what of an individual who you believe may have been divinely conceived?
Well,
and I might have thrown a wrench at you because
First of all, like I said before, the peacemaker of the Haudenosaunee tribes who may have lived perhaps 1200 AD, okay? In terms of more recent than that, you know, there's evidence that, well, this wouldn't be more recent than that, but let's go back a ways to 500 and 600 of the Common Era, King Arthur.
Oh, interesting.
There's some indication that King Arthur was divinely born. That really he is an emanation of Christ. He is another iteration of Christ. Okay. So there's, you know, there's beings like that. And
I mean, you must recognize some of these historic figures as, you know, and if you could trace their family tree, you with your insight now could probably go, wait a minute, she had this experience and this dream and this premonition, and the priest told her of a prophecy of her future children, that kind of thing leads to, yeah.
Yes. As soon as you start understanding these codes and symbols, you can go back and look at histories. Like there's a goddess named Matsu, who really was born as a human woman, but she was a very advanced divine soul who ascended to goddesshood. But I believe that her mother had a miraculous conception dream about her.
Wow.
So there are various, you know, that's a major goddess in Taiwan who has a temple in San Francisco, the Matsu Temple. I have gone in there and I've had miraculous experiences of unbelievable messages coming from this goddess that comforted me infinitely in all three visits that I made to that goddess temple. So, you know, these energies, they continue on throughout. And as I said, I know of three other divinely born children in recent decades.
People that you know or people that are...
One of whom I have seen, she is the daughter of a female Hindu saint and her Swami husband.
Oh, wow.
You can find pictures of her and find out more about her online. Another one is delivered in a book called Parthenogenesis, Women's Long Lost Ability to Self-Conceive, written by Dan Poitras, who tells us about a woman whose pseudonym is Lori, who conceived a child divinely on Christmas Eve 1976 through a flash of light, but the child only lived 3 months. There's another friend of mine in Mexico who had a very long experience working with Quetzalcoatl, and all indications are that she conceived through Quetzalcoatl and had a son who unfortunately died very tragically at 3 years old. You know, so there are these ongoing stories. Yeah. Okay.
It makes sense that you would see it present day with your research.
Yeah. But I think there's more to come. And it may be that we hear of, you know, some great being or person who's walking around, and it's going to turn out that his mother or her mother had a major miraculous divine birth story that we don't yet know about.
Amazing. The book is The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, Mary and the Lineage of Virgin Births. My guest today has been Marguerite Riegel-Yozo, and her books are available on Amazon. And what's your website? Give people your website so they can check in and see all the other good stuff that you have.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff, because I am the director of my own mystery school. It's called Seven Sisters Mystery School, and you can go to sevensistersmysteryschool.com. The seven is written out, S-E-V-E-N. That course, the Holy Womb Chakra Teachings that I discussed, is available. I also have a very fine course called the Mother Mary Mystery Teachings that goes beyond what's in this book. It includes some of it, but goes beyond about who Mary really was. Many other types of courses, another one on divine birth in ancient Greece, many free offerings. I have constantly new courses coming up, and I'm going to be re-offering my Oracle training starting September 2021 for women who wish to open their abilities to receive divine gnosis, divine information.
Oh, I love that.
And transmit it to the world. So many, many things. There are free offerings. I also do one-on-one sessions, and I invite people to go. And the book, again, is available wherever books are sold. Amazon, my publisher, Inner Traditions, indie.org, Barnes & Noble. You can get it in print, Audible, because I did a very careful job recording this. So
I was just going to ask you, so you actually recorded it yourself. Good.
Yes. I had
Audible.
Engineer assist me. And so that's a wonderful way to hear it and receive some transmissions through my voice. Also there's an ebook version.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Final question. What would you like the reader to get out of the book? Because you have a lot of meat in there, but if you were to
give us a synopsis basically of what a reader can get. What would you say?
That miracles abound, that divine birth is real, it's possible, that Mary did it, and that all of this knowledge can be applied to our own lives in very extraordinary ways, whose doors are only beginning to open now and provide an amazing path for us into the future as we co-create the new earth.
I love it. Would you also suggest that we should be working with the etheric levels a little more and maybe hearing what they have to say about our physicality and maybe take heed to some of the suggestions they might make?
Yes, absolutely. Because the divine birth technology shines the light on the interface between the body and spirit, the light matter interface. There is so much more to be known and done in that regard to help us to heal and to help us to evolve and to activate our original divine human blueprint that is stored within our DNA.
Wow. Amazing. All right. Hey, it's been a real pleasure, Marguerite, and continued success.
Thank you, Cliff. Wonderful to be here. Blessings to everyone listening.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. The Immaculate Conception, birth without sexual union between humans, divine intervention. And that's exactly what the Bible talks about. And it's fascinating to hear from Marguerite exactly, I mean, what the process is all about and how she drilled in to this this knowledge. There's so many documents that are out there that we don't really have a clue about until somebody like Marguerite, like many of the other authors I have on programs, on podcasts, find them. And when they have to be interpreted, they're interpreted. When they have to be like the Dead Sea Scrolls, those are fascinating. And they haven't completely deciphered them. Who knows what other knowledge is available? So, very interesting. Immaculate Conception. That's what it's all about. That's why we love these kinds of shows and these authors, is that we want to get a sense of exactly what they have discovered. So I hope you like that. Hey, I want to remind you that next week I am going to have the first of probably many authors, research investigators, speaking on the topic of UFOs. And the author of the program for next week is Alan Steinfeld. He wrote a book called Making Contact, Preparing for the New Realities of Extraterrestrial Existence. And perhaps you didn't hear, but just this past Friday, the 25th of June, the Pentagon released its analysis of its Navy fighter F-16 camera footage of a number of unidentified flying objects, as well as many, many other interactions that that the armed service has had. And I just finished that. You know, I don't do a lot of UFO material because it hasn't really advanced that much. There's, you know, the sightings, the occasional abductions. But hey, no one's landing. No one's putting boots on the ground and walking up to President Biden or any dignitary around the world and saying, hey, we're here. We want to talk. And it doesn't have to be a political figure. It can be just anybody. And that's where I'm at. And it was fun speaking with Alan. I hadn't talked to him in a while. He is a really good and one of these people who's knowledgeable on the UFO phenomenon. Probably 30 plus years of research. And this book, Making Contact, is our featured program next week. So please do join us. All right, that's it for today. I want to thank Marguerite. and her time with the program. As always, Dr. Pepper Hernandez on her insights. And as always, Ruth Thomas, Ruth, you rock. She makes it happen and really is a really integral part of the team. Thanks to the other to the others who are supporting too, audio and video. So, all right, that's it for this week's program on Destiny, and we'll catch you next time.